Thank you very much. And can you hear me and see me? I hope so. So apologies for not being there. I've had a bit of a bad dose of COVID, so best not to share it around. So I wanted to give academics viewpoint on where we are, particularly focused on quantum sensing, because that's an area that I'm working in. Again, it's a real privilege to be able to speak to you, and it's even a particular privilege to have funding from the Royal Academy of Engineering. And I think that's a key message. I want to probably echo the sentiments that have already been said today, in that this challenge is something for many communities to investigate. And with that in mind, I wanted to take you back in history and think about who was involved in quantum technologies back, I guess, in the early 20th century. This may be a photo that many of you know. I know, as a teenager, I had this on my bedroom wall, which perhaps I was destined to work in this area. And this is the picture from the fifth conference of famous physics conference series. And if we think about in 1927, when this was taken, there were some really positions in quantum physics and in theory that had been made. And even a quote from Heisenberg from this meeting was that it says that this conference has contributed extraordinarily to the clarification of the physical foundations of quantum theory. It forms, so to speak, the outward completion of quantum theory. So it's just a point of saying that back in 1927, there was this thought that quantum theory was somewhat complete. We had major discoveries at that point. And I think the fact that we're still today in 2024 talking about quantum technologies and quantum physics suggests that we're still very much on a journey. And I think that journey is really taking what these pioneering minds had and delivering it from the research to the reality. This is another photo. This was taken in 1981 in Boston, and in fact, it's the sort of the first conference that's sort of noted that combined physics and computer science. So, to us now, it may seem unusual that physics and computer science were very separate disciplines, but this was really a pivotal moment where physicists and computer sciences joined together. And it was at this time when Richard Feynman said, nature isn't classical. And if you want a simulation, you better make it quantum mechanical. And this was sort of arguably the birthplace of physics and quantum computing. So I think the main point here is that the seeds were planted back here, but what we needed was we needed interdisciplinary working, even at this early point. And if we look, I picked some more recent pictures. So this is from last year. This is from a conference on quantum sensing and metrology held in India. And the topics of discussion at this were actually curriculum development. So we're reaching a point where people are talking about quantum technology as curriculum, not just quantum physics or quantum mechanics, and showing that to lay a strong foundation of advancements in quantum sensing and metrology, and we need professionals from all fields to be contributing. And then to show you more in the photo gallery is this is the Gordon Conference series last year on quantum biology. I mean, I think quantum biology is something that's been known for quite some time, but having technology, sensors, and instruments to actually demonstrate this is something where we're really coming to a point where we can start to, we can start to detect things such as tunneling, quantum tunneling in enzymatic catalysis, and we're looking more at magnetoreception and unraveling the mechanisms behind that. Understanding how quantum coherence might play a part in photosynthesis. So it's the real, I guess, takeaway is that the growing importance of quantum biology, and at this time we're now developing quantum technologies that can help us uncover these aspects. And I had the pleasure to be at at the Quantum World Congress a few weeks ago in Washington, and on the stage here is it is Johan de Silva from the Office for Quantum, and this was a whole session dedicated to international partnerships and talking about policy. And so the point is, we're at a position, as I think Francis was looking at, is this is an international challenge. We not only need to look internally into the UK where we can have strategic advantage, but we need to look at ways we can scale the commercialization opportunities. We can think about responsible deployment of some of these technologies, and looking at how international partnerships will be really key to us getting the full potential of quantum technologies. So if we reflect on it, we've gone from probably the world's best minds in physics and chemistry, and we're moving towards where we're in a position where we're now talking about international policy and trade. So I think although it is an evolving space, it perhaps is representative of the complicated landscape that Francis was talking about. I then just did wanted to, I mean, I think people in the room are probably and online will know this, but you know, the UK, we're very fortunate in having such tremendous strengths in quantum sensing, both in the research domain and in development, as Francis was saying. I think it's you know, clear to say that the UK is at the forefront of quantum sensing research. And here's an example from the University of Glasgow, with their WEEG, which is a major breakthrough in quantum gravimetry, you know, harnessing these compact size and portable devices, which are going to have applications in civil engineering, environmental engineering, and much more. And so I think the key takeaway here is that this just sort of exemplifies the world-class applications, and the commitment to addressing real challenges, taking things from research to reality. And I think I've said before, I think Scotland could be a quantum country in its own right, all the way across. I mean, this here is another great example of the sort of SPAD camera that's been developed jointly with University of Glasgow and Heriot-Watt. And by harnessing the power of single photon avalanche diodes, so SPADs, you've got this camera which captures light at extremely low light conditions, and you can see the unseen by so sort of seeing obscured objects, and this has, you know, potential to transform things such as vehicles navigating and challenging situations, people trying to locate things in disaster zones, just as an example. And you know, this is a significant technology step forward, that's been showcased. If you come a bit further south, then the University of Birmingham have been working in the area of gradimetry, and have spun out this company, Delta G, and they've been using atom interferometry to enable you know, measurements which are going to have real impact on looking at hidden infrastructure in civil engineering applications, is looking at potentially groundwater levels, and in, you know, in indeed in general exploration under the ground. So this is, yeah, as I think as Francis says, it's probably 10 years ago we find this not something we would anticipate as being reality, but we're now in a position where you can have these types of quantum sensors out and about. Another example is the National Physical Laboratory are looking at sort of RF electric field probes. I guess MPL have got a massive whole sort of set of resources dedicated to quantum technologies, and I think as well as having quantum devices, I think the UK be in a great position to be able to offer calibration services and setting the standard for quality products. And I think you can't look much further than NPL for having some history with that. Closer to where I am is at the University of Nottingham, where there are optically pumped magnetometers which are able to map the very weak electric sorry magnetic fields in the brain. And so this is overcoming the use of cryogenic based squid magnetometers and enabling people perhaps to actually move about whilst they're being studied, and this will have benefits particularly for younger people who would find confinement to these sort of squid-based systems quite challenging. Another example is from Imperial College London and the spin-out company there, Digistain. Here they actually have applied the approach of undetected photons, I guess employing quantum entanglement, to look at how they can detect the interaction of light with, in this case, tissue samples. But they can have the light being at a much longer wavelength than standard cameras and optics would allow by through entanglement with a visible photon. And this system is actually being able to provide some objective measures and helping to stratify the type of cancer treatment for people. In this case, they've been focusing on breast cancer. And so that I guess showcases some of the big outputs that have come already. But I think what we need to do to accelerate this even further is that although the quantum landscape is brimming with potential, it can't exist in isolation. And to realize the transformative impact, we need to embrace adjacent technologies. And I think this is, a point that's been made already today. But I think we need to look at areas of, for example, of like precision manufacturing. So quantum devices have, intricate architectures and nanoscale components. So we need to be looking at, the demand and capability for having manufacturing at this level, packaging of electronics, and again the heterogeneous integration of components is going to be really key. I also often think with many of the quantum technologies, at some point we're trying to interchange between a photon or an electron or the other way around. So having the capabilities and skills for that will be quite important. I think the other thing is about building a quantum-ready workforce. I think for this we need a holistic approach. I think we're fortunate that there are young people who are interested in becoming scientists and engineers and working in technology. And we can see that university curriculum is expanding to incorporate quantum technologies beyond just a physics degree, for example. And we have got CDTs, which are giving us the PhD ready people. But I think we need a more holistic approach in thinking that, well, there are already people in the workforce who have got the capabilities or almost the capabilities we would need. And so I think there are very many transferable skills that we could look at to efficiently develop a workforce in the short term. I think we also need to consider the skills at all levels of technical and PhD level. And I guess just my final point is that we're at a precipice, I guess, of quantum technologies and how they're going to impact the next generation of technologies. So I think what we need to look for is collaborations and together, I guess, working together to embrace the quantum challenge. And with that, I'll end.